There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday. And remember, lots of ways to get in touch with the show. A good old-fashioned phone call. We do those at 343-0106. You can also use those same numbers for the Ascension Technologies text line, 343-0106. And on the app, hopefully you're running the FM Talk 106.5 app there on the phone where you can stream the station, access our 55 hours a week of live local shows in podcast form, our great social media feeds with breaking news in there, traffic maps, weather information, show schedules. It's like a Leatherman, like a multi-tool, but it's just on your phone for digital, something like that. In addition, if you look at the front page, you'll see that microphone icon down at the bottom of the page. If you'll press that, you can record a message and it emails it to the station. We can play it back on the air, not on just this show. It could happen during Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton or Jeff Poor's show or Bill Finch's show, any of the shows here. You can use that feature as well. So, and if you haven't got the FM Talk 106.5 app, do yourself a favor. Go grab it. Tell me what you think. It's for free. It's waiting for you at the App Store for you iPhone folks, or if you're cool and an old man like me and you have an Android phone, you go to Google Play. But both places, just look for FMTALK 1065. All right, a lot to do on today's show. Obviously, with coming off the tragedy in Nashville yesterday, more information out there, and it's turned into a political discussion as well. We'll get into that. And like I said yesterday, I'm not proud of it. I just have seen this enough times. Remember, I said this will either the president or Corinne Jean-Pierre will have some statement about Nashville and it will go immediately into a gun control discussion. Well, that took an hour and 15, hour and 30 yesterday to happen. We'll play some of that audio later on in the show. Plus, Yaffe joins us in hour number two. And lead off batter, good to see him in the studio. This is what happens during spring break. You get members of the House and Senate and they're home, and you can get them in the studio. House President Pro Temp Chris Pringle and District 101, my rep in studio. Good to see you.
Hey, Sean. Hey, Mom.
That's right. You always tell your mom hi. Spring break here. What do members of the legislature do on spring break? Are y'all heading for the beach? Have y'all rented a couple houses down at the beach and y'all partying it up or what?
I wish. I'm home working. Right. Remember, I own a company.
That's right.
I'm desperately going through trying to get some bids put together for some construction projects.
So spring break for you is
work.
Yeah. Work. Let's talk about sessions so far. And so y'all gaveled in for like whatever day or half a day or whatever, then went into one day, right?
One day.
And then went into special.
Yes.
This was this point that I've asked about, and I want to hear it from as many people as possible. This ARPA spending bill, eight pages. My reaction to not having been in the trenches with y'all is, you got to be kidding me. Eight pages? There's a bill to do, you know, whatever out there that's going to be 85 pages, and this is $1 billion spend in eight pages?
Well, it was very large chunks of money. So, you know,
right.
You're appropriating hundreds of millions of dollars to one subject.
Right.
But you have to remember, the government, the federal government sent that money with strings attached to it.
Could only go to certain things.
Exactly. And remember the first ARPA funds we spent? Most states hired professional consultants who charged a fee mm-hmm. to help guide them through this process.
Right.
And it was a very large fee. We didn't do that. We spent the money ourselves, and we did it under those guidelines, and we passed all their inspections. And
okay.
what we don't want to do is spend this money, and then a year or two from now have them come claw it back and say,
sure.
You didn't do that right, and we want our money back. Because we don't
because it'll be spent. Yeah,
yeah, we won't have it then.
Well, so. I mean, and so kind of what Representative Chip Brown said to me, too, he said, Sean, that the established pathways for that money were there after the first.
Exactly.
And I'm not, I use bucket. I can't use the T word, whatever the fancy word, the bucket. That was established, and this was just continued. The agencies were in place to spend this money. It was just to allocate it to that. I'm trying to find understanding, because to uninitiated, I saw eight pages. I said, you got to be kidding me. Eight pages to spend $1 billion?
Exactly. But the process was already in place, and we'd already proven we were responsible in the way we spent it, and the government had approved it last time. But never forget this. Our finance director is Bill Poole.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Poole was a committee chairman. He was a budget chairman when he was in the House. And we all know what a rock star he is. He doesn't draw attention to himself, but he's very intelligent. He's very good, and we trust him because he is a good man. So we trust that he's going to do the right thing and that he presented. And he worked with our budget chairman. This was not done in a vacuum. You know, okay. He worked with us. It just wasn't done in public.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's one of the things, I guess, because it wasn't done in public, that we weren't in electronic media in the state and in print media, we weren't, you know, eating it and digesting it and, you know, what we all do here. It was surprising to some of us. Yeah. But, you know, that's why I think the fact that we can come in and talk long form on shows like this helps me understand.
No, I mean, we had briefings and, you know, in caucus and...
I mean, how dry was the cement before you went in to special? Like, did y'all know what was coming?
Yes, we'd been briefed on it, yes.
Okay.
So we had seen it, it had been explained to us, and we kind of had an understanding. But look, again, let's get back to what a rock star Bill Poole is.
Well, I want to say that, but okay, I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you a question about this. Because I had this discussion with Todd Stacey yesterday, and, you know, Chairman Poole was on with him on Capital Journal, I think Friday, and talking about the prison funding thing. Also helped me with this one. Because of inflation, the cost is 50% more. I'm just help me. Help me. I'm just a hayseed. Well, you know me.
I'm going to tell you, I just got a call earlier. There will be a 9 o'clock conference call with the leadership to go over that issue. And
I mean, this is your world. I mean, yeah, people don't know. I mean, outside being a legislator, I mean, you're a builder. You're a real estate person. But 5%, I'd be like, 5%. 50%.
Well, we're all kind of shell shocked by that right now. So,
okay,
we're going to have a conference call on Thursday to talk about it, to get briefed on it, because I haven't been.
Because this is just the Elmore County facility, not even talking about Escambia yet.
Exactly.
It'll be interesting after that conference call if more information comes out, because we were looking at it yesterday, and some of the references were to the design build. I thought that was back in our rearview mirror that we talked about how this new design, I thought we had done that work.
Exactly, but something, I know there were some issues with the soil and the foundations that they have to work on. I knew that was an issue, but let me get briefed on it and I'll get back with you.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to ask you after that, because I mean, especially with your mind and what you do, if you know, you bid something to me and you come back and say, by the way, Sean, it's going to be another 50% more, I'd be like, huh? What?
Exactly.
What did I miss there? Okay, so that's something by, you said that meeting's when?
Thursday
at 9. Okay. I'll be interested to hear more at that point. Also, looking at getting back into regular session, we'll talk about a couple things. Of course, Representative Simpson's fentanyl bill, and then what you're talking about here on the fentanyl bill. Kind of explain what HB1 was, and then what you're talking about as well.
He had a bill that increased the penalties, the amount of time you spend in prison for selling or possession fentanyl. You know, if you had a certain amount, it extended the amount of time you had to serve in prison.
Okay.
My bill, which has passed House Judiciary Committee, is different. It says if you sell fentanyl, if you sell an opioid and you're not licensed to sell opioids and you cause somebody's death, we can charge you with manslaughter. Which is the case of that kid in Mary G. Montgomery.
Right.
They're doing it. Mine just makes it legally clear that you can be charged. It's being done now, but it gives them that.
Okay, currently that's being done, but this codifies the law.
This codifies explicitly that.
Give me an example. Okay, the case, we'll make it not even specific to that case. Let's make it something, just for discussion. So drug dealer cuts... let's not even make it like they're selling fentanyl. They're selling it as something else.
Exactly.
Right? Okay, yeah. They're selling this Lortab pill, or they mix it with whatever, the stuff they're selling, cocaine or marijuana, whatever. A person gets it and ingests it, and they die.
Exactly.
Then, if you can trace it back to who the drug dealer was, that person gets not just charged with selling drugs, it's manslaughter.
Exactly. And that happened, that's what exactly what happened. What started this process, and I've been at it for at least 3 years now, not four, a friend of mine's son bought drugs from his dealer, mm-hmm. and it killed him. It was laced with fentanyl.
It was some other drug.
Yeah, I thought okay. he was getting oxycodone, I believe okay. is what it was, but it was laced with fentanyl and it killed him. These dealers are selling illegal drugs that are illegally manufactured in Mexico. They're brought across the border. Well, actually, fentanyl is made in China, shipped mm-hmm. to Mexico. They assemble it into different drugs mm-hmm. to attract children, and they send it across the border. This is, you are a drug dealer selling illegal drugs on the street, and you cause somebody's death, we can charge you with manslaughter because oftentimes we know exactly who they bought the drugs from.
So in discussions with law enforcement, they're doing it now. They're making those cases and then going to the DAs. They're gonna. Yeah. They probably like that.
Yeah. Oh, they love it. Yeah. The district attorneys love my bill.
Okay.
It clarifies that you can be charged with manslaughter.
So it's in addition to HB1. It's
yeah.
Okay. And it's if people are looking at it, it's what's the House bill number? Do you have it, when it gets?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
Well, see, this is what I do.
Yeah, 82 or okay. 84.
Okay, we'll get it at the break yeah. and be able yeah. to get it. So if people are calling about that, you know, if they're calling their representatives, they want to know, you know, what bill they're talking about. A couple things here as we go into back into regular session. I ask everybody who comes in here, so I'm going to ask House President Pro Tem this question. What's first? What's first when you get back in? What's like, y'all, you know, what's the first thing y'all are going to tackle?
I just looked up House Bill 84.
84. HB 84.
Okay. We're going to work on the regular order calendar, but, of course, our primary responsibility is budgets.
Mm-hmm.
And that process is going now. But the job tax credit is going to pass. I just bank on it.
Okay, when we come back from the break, I want you to explain the job tax credit to folks here and what y'all are working at when you get back into session. Yeah. House President Pro Tem and District 101 Representative Chris Pringle, our guest right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:23 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Hi, I'm Sean, and Speaker Pro Tem, Alabama House, and District 101 Representative Chris Pringle in the studio. Got questions, too. We're getting them in on the text line. That is 343-0106. And so HB 84 is your fentanyl bill. It's not an instead of HB 1. It's an addition to Representative Simpson's HB 1.
The reason they weren't together is his deals with possession and
okay.
mine deals with distribution and selling.
So okay.
you get enhanced prison time for selling it. Mine, you get in prison time for causing people's death by selling it.
All right. We talked about budget. You mentioned getting back to it and the budget. So, budget. The 7% that y'all get to decide, it's not earmarked. What do I need to know? What's the wrangling on this now?
The governor sent an interesting budget over, and I've heard a lot of talk about it, the millions to go to the water park.
Yes. From school money.
Yeah, you know, but we've got, Mobile's got like $30 million in there for part of our airport.
Yes, I saw that as well. And I would have, Todd and I talked about this yesterday, but I mean, you've been working in this world so long that when the executive branch presents a budget, let's think about it in Washington, the president will present a budget, and then Congress goes, all right, that's cute. You know, let's do what we're going to do. At a state level, it's not that much, it's not dismissed as much as it is at a federal level. Is that fair, or is that...
Well, the ARPA funds came from the feds with a bunch of strings attached and a bunch of compliance we had to go through.
Right. But I'm saying, like...
But her budget
yeah,
is her, just her recommendation to us.
Right. But that's what I'm saying, though. At a federal level, when the president recommends a budget, you know, they do every year. And I would like to look through it and, you know, and I go, yeah, yeah. And then the Congress goes, yeah, we're going to do our own thing. At a state level, when our executive, Governor Ivey, presents a budget, do y'all look at it like, oh, this is an outline we have to do, or do y'all pull it apart? And what really happens?
This one's going to get pulled apart a little bit.
Okay.
I'm not on the budget committee.
But right, but
my conversations with the chairman and the members of the committee is they're not going to go along with some of her proposals. We accepted the ARPA because of the
That's a different thing.
But this is our money. This is the taxpayers of Alabama's money that we're charged with spending, and we're going to look at it and go through it. But I must warn people, I mean, the $30 million for our airport, what I want people to understand, that there has a component of that airport for an aviation technology training center in it.
Okay.
Because Airbus and
when you talk about it, because the way it was branded, it was $30 million to go towards the move from Farmers to Brookley.
Yeah. But, I mean, to help build the building, and part of the building is going to have an education component to it. Now, $30 million is not close to what the cost of that building is going to be. But remember, the city has put in money.
Cheaper than a prison.
The city has put in money, the county has put in money, and the state needs to put in money. That way we can draw down more federal money. And you have to remember, so much of what we do is designed to draw down those federal matching money.
Yes.
So, and it's, there is an education component to our airport because of that aviation technology training.
But, I mean, you brought up the water park. So is this the sausage being made? Is there, folks in Montgomery, in that area, they probably think that water park's as important as we think our airport is.
And that's what the process is about. And just because, I think it's interesting because I listened to the show and people are so upset about what's been proposed.
Mm-hmm.
It's just proposed. It hasn't been passed. So I can understand why people get upset about it, but let us work on it. Let's fix it and see what we can do with it.
Okay. So speaking of money, budgets, and revenue, I go back to my soapbox. I've been on the soapbox a long time. You've known me a long time. When the governor comes out and says rebates, right, and cheers, and people get, don't you want the money? And I'm like, it's not that I don't want the money. I just think if we have an opportunity here, whether it's through Minority Leader Daniels' plan or, you know, what Senator Orr's talked about, or I like the fact that I'm hearing details because that makes me think somebody's actually not just blowing smoke. They're actually thinking about how to bring back the state's portion of the grocery tax or limit it some. Or is that dead on arrival, or is that got legs? What do you think here? Because, and is it either or? If we go with the tax rebate thing that the governor is pushing, does that mean no grocery tax amendment, or can they both exist? What's your feeling?
I don't think they can both exist.
Okay.
Because remember, it's just a one-time rebate.
I know.
Just because right now, the way our taxes are set, when this economy downturns, all that money goes away instantly. It's just gone. So we don't want to spend this excess money we currently have because we know we're not going to have it in the future. It's going to plummet.
But isn't there enough, and this is me preaching for the grocery tax change, to put this aside and say, okay, and do like, you know, Minority Leader Daniels said, it's like we're going to, if this doesn't work, then we can go back. But let's try, because I think it is going to work. But just some kind of say, here's our cushion, this money here. We don't give the rebates back, but we have this cushion, and we start this process of trying to get rid of the 4% of state grocery tax.
Because that's the important thing. It's 4%. There's 6% of local taxes mm-hmm. on groceries. So we're only talking about 4% of your tax.
Well,
also remember this. Anybody that goes in and buys food on EBT cards pays no sales tax.
Right.
So,
but that's why I think people will say, well, the EBT, but no, I'm talking about the work. It gives everybody a tax break, but working poor, the people that are not taking public assistance.
And I agree with you on that, but let's talk about, because I put a bill in several years ago to take the tax off basic food products, mm-hmm. what we can, snap products, WIC products, milk,
The outside of the grocery store, the walls.
The stuff that we need, vegetables.
Yes.
But what they're talking about now is taking tax off everything. Soft drinks, ice cream, candy, potato chips, snacks, all the stuff that's killing us. We have the largest percentage of disabled people due to obesity, and you're going to make it easier and cheaper.
Yeah, but that's not going to change them. If the tax comes off of Reese's peanut butter cups or something like that, I don't think there's going to be more consumption. We got to figure out how people keep themselves from being so fat, but I don't.
But that obesity costs the taxpayers money.
Okay, coming right back. More with Representative Pringle, and I'll get your questions as well on the text line 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, and I'll grab your questions here for House Speaker Pro Tem, District 101, Representative Chris Pringle, and let's go to... But you're saying, just a side note here, because, you know, we've been all kind of goofing on the water park thing, that one person's water park's another person's airport?
Exactly.
Okay. Supermom says, who all do you think is on EBT?
No, I mean, the poorest among us are on EBT, but it's the working poor we're trying to help also, because everybody understands and agrees that that tax impacts the working people more than anybody else, because groceries are such a large part of the cost of taking care of a family, particularly now that
now it's like
all the government regressed, that the government put all the money in the economy and it raised everybody's prices. So it's inflation. And, you know, as everybody knows, inflation is only caused by one thing, and that's from Washington putting too much money out into the community.
You know, it's interesting to watch this at a federal level. We'll get back to state, but, you know, Jerome Powell's situation where you go, the banks are... Some banks are crumbling, issues there. At the same time, you got to raise interest rates out there, you know, and then you hear it continues to go up a quarter point, and then you get these robust job numbers come in, and you're going, okay, well, you're not, if the point is that they don't like to say it, but raising that interest rate for people to lose jobs. I mean, that's how the economy right sizes, right? I mean, that's the hard, right? That's the hard, I say the hard thing.
Economics is just kind of cruel sometimes.
Right. I mean, when y'all hear when the Fed talks about raising interest rates, the net effect is people lose jobs. Therefore, there's less money in circulation in the system and inflation comes down. Is that true?
Yeah. That's okay. Just pure economics.
Yep. Just like sometimes I don't sugarcoat things. All right. Don says, good afternoon, Sean. I don't know if it's just me, but I can assure you that if they do away with the grocery tax, I will not be buying Reese's peanut butter cups in bulk. I'll be buying staple meat. Potatoes, eggs, milk, and survival food. I just don't get why they haven't done this. The heck with the lottery or Amtrak and a water park in Montgomery. Yeah. So I mean, as a priority, why is this not?
Like I said, I put a bill in several years ago to take the tax off what I called basic necessity foods.
Dan says, Sean, think about it. He has a point. If they make all groceries tax-free, that doesn't seem right. Coca-Cola is not a necessity. Water, milk, vegetables, and meat are. I don't want to miss out on the revenue earned by the people that are living off the vending machine food. Those people don't blanking deserve a tax break. That screams irresponsibility, and those same people are going to be the ones that consume the most resources from our healthcare system, likely from tax-funded healthcare. So.
That's what I said.
Okay.
It's costing us money.
Jerry says, talking about obesity, when there are people who claim to be conservative going to do something about the size of state government. I get what you're saying, Jerry. We are growing faster than some of the far left states. Alabama has a spending problem.
You know, we cannot control Medicaid. It's when I first went to the legislature, it was about 16% of the general fund budget, and it's reached well over 50, almost 60% of the general fund budget, because it just grows.
Medicaid grows. How much?
It's when you combine Medicaid and the prison health care system, it's over 60% at some point. I mean,
the non earmarked general fund.
The health care cost. I mean, we have.
So is that saying no to Medicaid? I mean, is there any Medicaid expansion coming?
Well, I mean, they took away our subsidy this year, the government, and the Medicaid commissioners asked for an additional $60 million this year just to cover what we're going to be short if we don't increase our funding to it. Just this year, without expanding it any more than it is. Every year, more and more people get on it. So,
but is it because just growing number of Alabamians, or we're changing the parameters that get you in Medicaid?
Kind of both, but the parameter, the number of people eligible go up. The number of people participating go up every year, but also the health care costs go up. Like everything else, everything goes up. The cost of health care goes up. The number of people participating in the program goes up. and we have to pay for it. And it's not something that we can control. It's we're told how much we have to put into that pot, and then we got to figure out how to pay for everything else afterwards.
So one of the lines you'll hear for Medicaid expansion is that if you do this, there'll be less cost to the hospital systems and, you know, with indigent care and all that, that then factors into the cost of health care. What do you say to that?
Exactly. And all this is what every proposal I've ever seen, and I've sat through numerous ones of these, you know, presentations, all the additional revenue that comes in to the state of Alabama from Medicaid expansion goes into the Education Trust Fund. And all the additional expenses of Medicaid expansion comes out of the general fund. How do you make it balance? We have two separate funds by constitution.
Yeah.
And that becomes the issue. Everybody would like to do it. It'd be a very compassionate thing to do, but how do we pay for it? We don't have the ability to live in debt.
And people don't realize, but that's not fair. There's some people that have not looked elsewhere, that every state's not in a situation where you have an ETF behind a wall. It's part of, you know, where it's separate.
They just have one big pot, yeah.
Yeah. And they allocate as needed versus this is, what, we have a 93% earmarked general fund budget and 100% dedicated ETF.
Yeah, well, here's an example. 95% of all income tax paid in the state of Alabama, both corporate and personal, is earmarked for teacher salaries, period.
What percent?
95% of all income tax paid, but a lot of your sales tax and everything else is earmarked to the ETF.
Yeah, people, that's what we're talking about. This idea that if we would reduce the state's portion on grocery tax, what I get when people come at me is they're saying that I must hate kids, right?
Yeah, because it goes to the Education Trust Fund, yes.
All right, so a couple questions here when we're talking about revenue into the state, and I'm going to lump a bunch of them. Basically, they're talking about, okay, well, we could do this with lottery and gaming. Why don't we have a lottery? Why don't we have gaming bills? You know, so why?
It takes 63 affirmative votes in the Alabama House of Representatives to pass a constitutional amendment to create a lottery or a gaming bill. If you do just a lottery, that's Class 3 gambling, and it gets very complicated legally, but basically if the state is engaged in Class 3 gambling, then the Indians are entitled to Class 3 gambling under the Sovereign Nations Treaties.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to pay any taxes. So in order to negotiate some type of agreement, there has to be an agreement, in our opinion, where there has to be some tax revenue coming out of the Indian casinos.
So for them to give that up, then they got to get something for it. That's the compact.
They want a compact where they have exclusive casinos. Nobody else gets them. Then the argument is, why should we do this and give everything to one business and allow them to do it and cut off all the other businesses?
But let me play devil's advocate for a second. Even if the sovereign lands, the Porch Bandit Creek Indians in their sovereign lands are not paying taxes and running Class 3 gaming, and I can argue that they might have better odds because there's more profit incentive, but that doesn't – right now you're not getting any – taxes from
off the gambling. Now, all their other industries they use.
But not off the gambling. Yeah. So nothing changes there except you have the opportunity, the liberty of the people to have that lottery. And in addition, you have the revenue that comes in from that lottery.
Exactly.
But you're saying, okay, well, if this happens, then, the Porch Bandit Creek Indians is not going to pay. They're going to have Class 3 gaming and not be paying taxes.
Okay, on the gambling.
On the gambling portion. Yeah. But they're not paying taxes on that right now.
Exactly.
So if you then have it a lottery where the state's making revenue from that and people have the liberty to do lottery, which is, I've called it a stupid tax forever if you want to play the lottery, but people have liberty to do that. They do that and revenue comes into the state. You are still more dollars in than you are sitting here in 2023, March of 2023.
Exactly. But do you want to lock it down to where only the Creek Indians have the casinos? Can we not put one in Birmingham? Can you not put one in Huntsville? Can we not put one in Gulf Shores or Dolphin Island?
Well, I would like it to be up for bid for whomever can put the money together and risk the capital.
Bring some of the big people in for developments. The Indians have done a fabulous job, and they do pay a lot of taxes in the state of Alabama. But where's the line between them having an exclusive right to control all the casinos and maybe having other people have casinos in the state if we're going to enter into the realm of gambling?
So it gets back to their question here. The reason it is complicated, but the first thing you said, I think, is the key. The votes aren't there. without having making these deals.
Exactly.
Right, because you don't have unanimous support amongst Republicans. Right, there's some that no deal's going to work. It's a moral thing or whatever. They'll never vote for it. Then you have to have Democrats vote with you.
And then once you get to that realm, every time I've seen a proposal, they want to give so much away that the revenue doesn't match the giveaways. You're giving away more than you're bringing in. And you're like, you can't do that because the demands on giveaways get so high that it just doesn't work out mathematically.
So, wait a second. So to get the votes that you would need to get from Democrats there, what goes along with it will cost the state more than the revenue could bring in from gaming.
The ones I've seen, yes.
Well, that's interesting. That's tough. Damn Yankee says Alabama property taxes are $3 per 1,000 and the national average is $10 per 1,000. So he's asking, I guess, you know, to change that versus and get rid of the grocery tax. I guess that's what he's addressing.
Well, if he wants to pay more in property taxes, all he has to do is go take off his homestead exemption off his house, and he'll pay more in property taxes because it's a constitutional amendment. The voters put in current use, and the voters, you know, we've allowed the voters to vote on property, raising property taxes in the state of Alabama, and they voted down. I mean, the voters have to decide whether they're going to pay more in property taxes. And the interesting part about that, if you pay property taxes, you can write those off on your federal income tax.
Mm-hmm.
But if you pay a sales tax, you can't write that off anymore. So a property tax is a tax that, you know, state property tax is a deduction on your federal income taxes.
I mean, that might be, for some people might be a better trade-off. It just depends on what you spend what you spend on groceries, what you spend on property.
But your homestead exemption is part of the current use tax structure. If you want to pay more in taxes, just take your current use status off.
Don says, I do have a question. It's food that is bought with SNAP card taxed. We said no.
No.
So that is...
It's an EBT card, the electronic benefit transfer card.
Right. So once again, when we talk about this, because I go through this like every time I talk about it, this does not have a component for... So these are the people who are not on assistance, the people I think it would help most.
Yeah.
I mean, they're poor, but they're not getting public assistance.
Exactly.
So... To me, that impacted that group. Everybody would get the same benefit who buys groceries, but that group right there on the edge of that, it would have a magnified.
That would be huge for them. I mean, think about it. If you're
extra if you're working, $20 a month or something like that, and you don't have.
You've got four kids you're trying to feed, it'd be massive.
Okay. You have more questions? So, I mean, is there anything coming up in this session to deal with gambling lottery again? Is there any bill? I mean, it was such a big deal when Del Marsh brought it, but is there anything like it now?
Senator Albritton has said he's not going to bring a gambling bill this session.
By the way, people have chimed in like, Scott, I certainly don't feel that I pay too little in property tax. So, yeah, those folks are in on it as well. So budget's the number one item as y'all come back into session.
Yes, budget. That's our number one. The Constitution says we are to appropriate the citizen, the tax, the money of the state of Alabama and deal with whatever else we deem necessary.
But it gets flipped around. I watch what happens up there. Yeah. And it seems like the budget discussion is always like, it's the last, we only have 4 days left in session. And, you know, that's what's happening versus, you know, the other things that come up and get debated beforehand.
Yeah, well, you know, Bob James put in like 1982, the budget isolation resolution that takes a 3/5 vote of the members voting to suspend the Constitution to bring any bill up before the budget is passed in order to force us to pass the budgets first. Well, think about it. We came in January. We elected a speaker. I was elected pro tem. Then we appointed the committee chairman, and we made the committee appointments. They met for several weeks. Then we went into session. They were trying to get ready. It takes a long time to have those budget hearings. Took 6 weeks, and all the different agencies had to come before the legislature and present their budgets. And they're working through that process. It is a massive project to write that budget, and it just doesn't happen quickly. So, yeah, it happens towards the end of the session.
Okay.
But also remember that BIR vote stays in place until the budgets are passed. And we always talk about how dangerous it gets those last couple of days after the budgets are passed.
Yeah, then you don't have to have the 3/5 without the BIR.
Things can fly.
All right, coming right back with our conversation, District 101 Representative and Speaker Pro Tem of the House, Chris Pringle, our guest. We'll get to more of your questions. And I got to ask about if the federal thing, too. The, you know, kind of what's when we think SCOTUS is going to tell us, you know, what's going on. We'll do that when we come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:52, FM Talk 106.5, and we continue a conversation with Representative Chris Pringle, House Speaker Pro Tem, and he's working during spring break. It is the Alabama Legislature spring break. Y'all are back to work. First day is Tuesday. First day is Tuesday, back at it. And talk about that kind of list of items you're working on. I do want to, before I go any further, though, because we have some questions, but I want to turn to a conversation you know I've had many times. And it's, you know, your work, which I don't know why you volunteer to do it, but your work on the redistricting in Alabama. And if y'all could go back and listen to the podcast when Representative Pringle described that process. I don't know, like, who wants that? But obviously you did. Now, having that heard by the Supreme Court of the United States, when do you think? Is it a June thing or when? I mean, because this, and explain why that's important too when we get this.
Well,
back.
It's, I talked to Steve Marshall and he told me that this court has been very quiet. Nothing's leaking out now.
Yeah.
After that last one,
yeah,
nothing's coming out.
Yeah.
He said there's no indication. We expect a ruling sometime in June or July.
Okay.
We think they're going to hold it to the end and let it out because they're not letting many rulings come out at all. So, just this past week, I mean, you know, the things that have to happen, like we had to get in because we went out for the special session, so we couldn't do regular session work. So last week, you know, we had to get me elected to put back on the reapportionment committee. And then the reapportionment committee had to meet so they could elect me to be the House chairman so that I could go sign all the interrogatories that had been piling up. And Senator, McClendon left, so we now have Senator Livingston, and we had to sit down and sign a bunch of interrogatories with him.
So those have been waiting, and you can't send them back because you're not officially in that capacity.
Because the litigation is still continuing because there's multiple.
Oh, explain that. Okay.
There's multiple lawsuits, and then the Supreme Court took what they heard, which was part of the bigger Merrill suit. So there's still some questions that have to be answered. Really depending on what the Supreme Court says. Once they rule, then we'll go back to federal court and
So the Supreme Court is not going to be ruling on the entirety of this then?
Well, they're going to take a vast, vast majority of it, yes. I mean, if they rule in our favor, it's going to pretty much wipe the case out.
Okay.
If they rule
okay.
against us, then we're going to be, it's going to be an interesting, depending on how they rule.
Well, and that timeline, too. So, I mean, it was the timeline y'all had to deal with, not getting the census information. You know, y'all weren't receiving it in time and having to do this now. You've got the lawsuit. You go to Supreme Court. You get something in June or July. Let's say they rule against the state.
And that,
what has to be done before?
Have you been reading my interrogatories? Now, that's kind of what we're discussing right now is how long will it take us if we have to redraw? What's going to occur? How long will it take us to take that ruling and then come back and start redrawing districts and then pass them through? And you'll have to have an extraordinary session of the legislature, you know, pass them, let the courts approve them, and then hold, you know, run under the new districts in 2024.
I mean, yeah, it's not a, I mean, it's a, between now and 2024, people say, well, you got a while, but not if you don't get anything back till June or July.
Yeah.
Then that process, and there'll be a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Right? Every time.
I'm right back in getting information in August and having to go through and hold public hearings and do the whole process all through September, October, and November again.
So would we be in a situation where that wouldn't be ready for 2024 cycle?
That's what we're trying to determine. So, yeah. I mean, it's this is the minutia that we deal with all the time because one thing begot something else, which begot something else. And now the judges want us to change the primary date because the primary runoff now falls on April the 2nd.
Okay.
You know, I mean, yeah, I think it's April 2nd.
It's
right after Easter. That was the problem. And it's like a holiday. It's an Easter weekend, and they can't get the equipment moved in the voting precincts and set up.
In the churches and all,
But I'm like, remember when they moved the primary here in Mobile to Mardi Gras Day?
It was not the best decision.
But they want to change it from a 4-week runoff back to a 6-week runoff. Because, you know, originally it was three, then we went to six, then we went back to four, now they want to go back to six.
But, I mean, just the reality of that is, I mean, I don't want to have, at a federal level, too, I don't want to be pushed further because, you know, the SEC primary, we call it, that change that was made that brings more national people to the state and paying more attention to us. But you might not be able to be ready by then, right?
Exactly. But I don't.
So then what happens?
I don't think our primary drive is going to ever bring a lot of presidential attention.
But it's more than it used to be. What was that change was 10, 15 years ago or whatever?
I still don't think it's... How many presidential campaigns spent a lot of time in Alabama?
Former President Trump?
Yeah. Nine votes?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but it's early on. It's yeah, I mean, yeah. How many votes does Iowa have?
I don't. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's kind of, look at it. Why do we end up, political folks talk about Iowa all the time? Not as, you know, a big block of votes there, but they're first. And they may be, you know, so.
But we're first along with a bunch of other states that have a lot more electoral college votes.
True. So. True. So my takeaway here is don't expect a leak. They're not doing that anymore at the Supreme Court. That was so out of fashion after leaking the... Did they ever find the leaker?
They've never disclosed
it. No.
Now what?
Yeah, it's amazing, huh, how that works. But June or July, and then if they side with the state, we're good, move along. There's these... You said there's other lawsuits.
There are other issues that...
But they might fall in line.
Yeah, after, exactly. Okay. But you remember they're making the same claims in our legislative districts as they're making in the congressional districts. Mm-hmm. The congressional districts are what's before the Supreme Court. But what they rule will affect all 435 seats in Congress, all 7,000 legislative districts in the United States. Every city, every county, every school board, single-member district will be affected by that ruling.
Wow. Thanks for your time today. Leaves me with more questions. Come back and see me soon. District 101 Representative Chris Pringle, Speaker Pro Tem of the House. We'll be right back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile.